This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the City Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, Sewegwego, Jogdagoy Yanyats. My name is January Rogers, your host for Words and Culture. And since coming back home to Six Nations in the summer of 2019, it seems, but there is also evidence of areas of my life becoming elevated. I'm the busiest I've ever been in my career as a writer, educator, and media producer, but also how I operate as a Haudenosaunee person. I am truly grounded here on my land. More importantly, I'm received by the spirits and energies of this land. I am a custodian, not an owner. The land provides everything, all the special instructions of how to operate and conduct ourselves here. And that may sound philosophical or kind of like poetry, but it's those notes of poetry that are embedded in the language. We hear it in the English translations of our language.
My guest this week is the personification of all the things I just talked about. Gatsia Hondo, although a young man in his early 20s, hold many positions of cultural responsibility, one of which is being identified, or chosen, if you will, to be a longhouse speaker and someone who is knowledgeable enough to be called upon to conduct ceremony in community. He visited this auntie at my home on Six Nations, where we talked about his ambassador duties and much more.
I'm going to ask you to teach me how to say your name.
Gatsia Hondo.
Gatsia.
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 Hondo.
Hondo.
Gatsia Hondo.
Gatsia Hondo. And what does that mean?
Fires here and there.
Oh, yeah? And that what language is that?
Mohawk. Kanyakeha.
Nice. Which languages do you speak?
Which languages do I speak?
Yes.
Okay, I speak English. I speak Kanyakeha. Kanyakeha is my first language. And I've been taking some classes learning how to speak Kayakono. And being from Quebec, I just know a little bit of French. Just a little.
You're not really from Quebec. You're from Ganawage?
I'm from Ganawage.
Nice. Yeah. Good. Yeah. How did you come into being speaking Kanyakehaga?
Well, it's my first language. Both my mother and father are second language learners. And my folks are, their names are Sktahadi Lazar, father, and Tatum Yerihawi McCumber is my mother. And they worked really hard studying the language. They've done it for many years. They both became teachers at some point. And they still teach to this day. Now and then, my mother, back at home in Kahnawake, she runs a language nest in Kahnawake. And then she established, I think one back in 2004, up until 2006, and then reestablished in 2014 and has been going ever since.
What's the name of her language nest?
Yagwa Wazira Dajje. I think she got that inspiration from the Maori people that she had met a long time ago, who run their own language nest out in New Zealand, which was like the first language nest that was made for language revitalization. So a language nest, if like for people who don't know, is a home-like environment. Kind of just like gearing away from the school aspect, and it's geared towards mothers and sometimes fathers with young children, helping them raise their children to become first language speakers, while at the same time the mothers are learning to become speakers.
When you mentioned that you were speaking Cayuga, how are you learning Cayuga language?
I'm currently enrolled in Six Nations Polytechnic and a Bachelor's of Arts in Ngwe Hwe languages. as a part of that, they have a Mohawk stream and a Cayuga stream, and I ended up taking a Cayuga stream so I can have something new to practice. And well, I'm interested in the linguistical aspect behind it, so I thought it would be really cool to that this other language.
The language journey for you has been, how has it been? Easy, hard? Are you finding that now you're in a position where you can share as a language teacher?
It's been, people will say that I've had it like really easy, and I guess that's like half true. I was able to pick up a lot more on the teachings, and I was able to pick up a lot more on some of these speeches that I would hear. I would understand a good portion of it, but I don't know everything in the language, and I don't know everything in the culture. You know, I'm just learning myself. So I've had some of these people who taught me, who are elders, and then some of these people are second language speakers who have taught me some stuff that I didn't know about before, and I always want to give them credit for the work that they do teaching me, because at some point, like despite being a first language speaker, I ended up taking a Mohawk course. Mm-hmm. Out in Kahnawake for 2 years, which is an adult immersion course out there. And I wanted to learn more about the linguistical aspects, which was really interesting, because I learned about how Mohawk is a polysynthetic language. Polysynthetic meaning you can put pieces of a word called morphemes to create one complicated word to convey like an entire sentence in just one word. And there's it's not just Mohawk, but there's many native languages that are like that.
Right.
Yeah, all across North America. So Mohawk is one of those that has like all this these complex meanings.
When you say you're able as a speaker and a learner, you're understand the language in speeches, do you mean like in Longhouse?
Yeah, and Longhouse is one of those places that would a lot of these speeches that are being told. And I grew up going to Longhouse back home in Kahnawake, and every now and then my family would travel out to Akwesasne. And for a little while, my father was living out here. We went to Mohawk Longhouse here in Oswego for a little while as well. And I get to hear these different speeches that are being done in our language. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could talk to me about the importance of language, being a culturally involved person. Is it absolutely necessary, or you think that a person who is not a language speaker can still be authentically involved in culture?
Coming from where I come from, it had been rather dormant on culture for a long time in Kahnawake. In recent years, probably in the past 30 years, it had become something very big for people to follow culture. Out in the east where I came from. In terms of learning language, a lot of people have held on to that. Some of their families have held on to it. And I guess some would say that it was more fortunate than some others were. And I'm grateful for that. And a lot of the elders that I'm friends with back at home, a lot of them are they don't follow the culture all that much. They attend church. More often than not, and it's not like their fault or anything like that. That's just kind of like the way the circumstances came about in that way. But a lot of the younger generation now are becoming aware of the things going on around the world, and they wanna find a way to be connected somehow. People will travel around and they find culture in long, and I know people who want to practice that more often. I wouldn't say that it's that it's absolutely you have to change everything you believe or anything like that if you want to be a language learner. But for me, learning the language, I can go like wherever I can hear the language. I can go to church. just to listen to some of their church hymns that they sing there. And I know a lot of friends who sing, and they sing all these songs, and they show me some of these books that I have a book with church hymns in it that has like all these complicated Mohawk words in there and really old Mohawk words. But more often than not, I do mostly Longhouse, the work that I do in terms of spiritual beliefs and stuff like that. That's what I follow, and I put through ceremonies for people. I put through different speeches, and I bought funerals. And I've helped out for many years. Some of my brothers have done the same. My father has done that, and my mother helps out with that.
In your language, tell me how old you are.
23.
How do you say that in your language?
Dawasa asa ni dawaja.
You're just a baby. A baby doing ceremony. This is so great. I wanted to ask about that confluence of church and culture and language, because of course when we think of church and the relationship Indigenous people have, it's very ruinous to Indigenous culture. So when you talk about church, and maybe your grandparents went, you're saying, or the generation before your parents went, they're mostly like church people. Were they able to bring the language into? Like, was that like the first kind of example we saw of reconciliation?
The first example of reconciliation?
And I don't even really believe in reconciliation, but what I'm asking is, would you say that would be the first example of the blend of the settler nation spirituality or religion and the Indigenous culture? Is that where that happened?
Like, the way it was, like, integrated to me, it was, like, with Christianity being such a big part of our history, as it was, like, forced upon us, or many of our people have gone and they followed that, the way all the circumstances that have brought us to where we are today. With everything that happened with residential schools and everything like that, There's no question about it that there's a lot of awareness going around. So everybody's talking about it now, where not that long ago nobody ever talks about residential schools and all the trauma that we went to, and then now it's coming more awareness. Yeah, you know, and you see Every Child Matters all over the place. People wearing those the orange shirts. And you see people laying shoes across in front of a church, and Every Child Matters and all the other stuff, and it's becoming very present, and really in the last 2 years becoming a very big thing, and it's good because people are becoming aware, and that's what you would need, is for people to know that this is what the Canadian government, this is what the church had done to our people, you know, for so many years, over 100 years of residence. This is all the stuff they've done to us, and it's not even that long ago. You know, our grandparents were in there, you know, and many people who are still alive, they're all survivors of all that stuff. And now, with the stuff going around, there's this movement of reconciliation now, and I don't believe in it either. I think it's fake, much of it, but like anything that we can get from them, it's never going to be enough, I don't find. However, the amount of money that they're going to send to us or to our schools, to our community, however the amount, they're never going to stop paying back because of all the trauma that have been dealt with us, not just with residential school, but with land loss and all these other forms of genocides and all these wars that have been fought and all these laws and these legislations that have been made without really discussing with us about all that stuff. We've lost a very significant amount. There's no question about that.
So talking about the colonial religion and Indigenous spirituality, but then of course there's the political, which gives the understanding of our governance, Haudenosaunee governance, And that comes from also the land and the sky and all kinds of different sources, you know, that we learn from. And I'm just wondering, politically, how are we maintaining our governance through language?
That's a very complicated. Everything has changed for us and have more, you know, there's a lot of division within our own people, right? Because there's so much division on, there's people that went on to believe different things, not just religiously, but politically, you know, so people have gotten integrated into this society, this kind of like foreign society where they take part in it and they cast in voting for the government or whatever, or it's like there's like many shades of gray with that, you know. And even in terms of like the Confederacy, and people are in big dispute about like what the Confederacy really is and who should hold all these positions and who should establish everything, what these communities can provide, you know. And it's very messy.
Someone else who has made their way home to Ganawagi Mohawk territory is Hamilton-based singer-songwriter and visual artist Tom Wilson, frontman for Blackie and the Rodeo Kings and Chunk House. We're reaching way back Tom's vast musical archive to bring you this week's track, That's How I Walk, from the 2005 album The Shack Recordings he made with the iconic Daniel Lanois. Enjoy.
Here comes the longest night. Here comes the pain. Here comes the longest night. And a love for you that'll never come back. A love for you that'll never come back. That's how I walk all over the home. It's been the hardest ride. It's been a trip. It's been the hardest ride. And when I walked out, I never looked out and never looked back. That's how I walk all over this world. That's how I walk all over this world. That's how I walk. That's how I walk. Dream about my credit card. Dream about my kids. My neighbors. And I woke up, I never looked back. I woke up and never looked back. That's how I walk all over this world. The telephone, I lost my grip. Took back the words I said, but when they left my mouth, they never came back. Left my mouth and never came back. That's how I walk all over this world. That's how I walk all over. Thank you.
Rogers, and I'm speaking with Katsuya Hondo. I asked him what advice he would give to people who are just starting to learn Kanagahaga.
I mean, the one thing I can say about who are getting into this, to all of this for the first time, into their language journey, I would just tell them patience is very much key. You become patient and you just stick with whatever works for you. I would tell people that there's a lot of work that goes into it. Sometimes it takes very many years for some people to learn, and it's not going to happen overnight. So that's why very much key to it. And it's very complicated the way the language is set up, and there's so many layers and layers about what our way of thinking is, not only in terms of culture, but in terms of custom, and that our language conveys a very different custom from the way the English or the French or the Dutch or Germans and what they think. Yeah, so we have a very different way of describing different things and different objects, and it's very abstract, in a lot of our ways, and are like that as well. And it's very important to be aware of all that, and a lot of those could be the reason why some people have a really into the language. Some people will get into the language and they think literally,
right,
how everything translates to English, but it doesn't all work like that. It's very complicated and conceptual. It has all these different layers that you would need to be aware about. You do your search into what our language is and try to get what the what some of the patterns are. And the language has a lot of different patterns. And once you start to get it, some people have a really hard time for a very long time, but then only recently it starts to click, and they're like, okay, now that makes sense. And this makes sense, and this makes sense, and now I can just make all these words. Not really make them up, but put them all together, polysynthetically. And find these different meanings and these different senses. It starts to make sense.
You know, the immersion school in Ganawagi that you mentioned earlier, that 2-year program that you did. That's been going on a long time, hey, like many years.
Yeah, here's the thing about these classes. Some of them, they got different numbers of classes, and they got different numbers of people in each class. So some of them would have like up to 20, some of them would be just 15. But they would accept like certain people who they can eager, and it's like, this person is the most eager. That person is really, and just like who we might think are the most likely to excel and all of that. For a lot of them out at the end of 2 years, not all of them come out speaking a whole lot, and there's some of them that do come out speaking a whole lot, and I think it just depends on the individual and their circumstance and the way their minds are and how they learned and based on their experiences as well. And it's and that's like a whole complicated process that they would all go through, each and every one of them, you know. And I think it's good that that there is a community that has that would have a program like that, that can be up to 2 years. It's like you're going to high school, but the only subject you need to worry about is language.
Amazing,
right? And it's every day, so you can expose yourself into that. Mm. But for growing up, the best way for me has always been speaking at home. For the children, or for parents who want their children to speak, is that when the children are growing up and they get used to something like that being at home, it can have a very big difference. And with me growing up, one of the things that have helped me when I was like 4, 5, 6 years old is having my mother's language nest. And there's a reason why my mother had this language nest, is because she wants to raise her kids to be first language speakers. And when I was growing up, I had English. I did. But I was more used to speaking Mohawk. And then when it comes to me being at family gatherings or different events where it's all English, she says I was like in a shell or something like that, and interact with folk or anything like that. And then she established this language nest, this idea that she had for this language nest, making it kind of like grandma's house or whatever, and raising kids in a home environment. And then she told me, she was like, you really came out of your shell being a part of the language nest, because now there are other people that who speak the language. There are other kids that you are surrounded by who are speaking the language. And there are elders that help out as well, and they're speaking the language. Comes natural. Let's say it wasn't a thing that was forced. It was just something that was there, and I was just immersed into that. And there was a few other kids that were immersed into that. Even today, I hear some kids that have gone through that and really have like a good amount of awareness in our language and a good amount of base, because they have it so early on in childhood. Right. Now they have this strong base in the language, where if later on they wanna take a course or anything like that, they would have like a much easier time than some others would.
So community is important.
Community, yeah. That's really what it all comes down to: community and just people taking care of each other in that way, and just having a place that you can go to every day where you can hear the language and just work with people, you know. Mm-hmm. The language nest, you know, really it's a home environment, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not just being at home and sitting in a classroom or anything like that, but really it's just it's going out on walks or going out building fires with people or doing stuff in the home and cooking. And doing all these different activities, it's very important, but they give you a feeling like you're at home, you know, and it gives these kids a feeling that they're at home, right?
Nyawagua Gatsia Hondo for such a great visit and chat about language and culture and his personal language journey. When I reflect on our time together, I am reminded that there are 20-year-olds and then there are 20-year-olds. Who are so grounded in who they are as Haudenosaunee people that it feels like I'm talking to someone 50 old because of their knowledge and level of cultural confidence. Before Gatsia Yondo left, I packed him a container of my homemade corn soup, a recipe I have been perfecting since coming home, and I wanted to share the best of what I could offer to this ambassador for all that he has shared. And now, this is the point where I get to try my hand in words in Gangeha. Let's start with Aguaego. It means everyone. A-gue-go. Aguaego. Everyone. Guanyungue. Which means our medicines. On-gua-nyung-gue. Our medicines. Yawego. It tastes good. Ya-we-go. It tastes good, and I hope that's what Gatsia Hondo said about my corn soup. My name is January Rogers, Words and Culture, the Haudenosaunee. Until next time, be well and take care. Anagawahi.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
Hey, my name's Katie. You want some cool new music? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang out with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.